Hey everyone, welcome to the Android Central Podcast. This is episode 423, and we are all sitting at the end of a very long day for the first day of Google I.O. 2019. I am Russell Holly. I'm joined by Andrew Martinick.
Oh yeah.
I'm joined by Michael Fisher.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. And I am joined by Nirav Gandhia.
Hello. Mm-hmm.
So, gentlemen, it's been a day.
It's a long day.
It's about 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Right. We've
been up since 6.
Nursing a coffee and Bailey's. Keeping the dream alive.
Of course.
Yeah. Nirav just woke up from a steak hangover. Feeling good?
Not really. I'm still kind of in the hangover mode.
He's upright.
The chances of this podcast staying on the rails are relatively low.
And we've got some Google I.O. to talk about.
We do have some Google I.O. to talk about. So, tons of stuff happened today. But as was pointed out to me by several developer folks that I talked to, a lot of it was kind of under the covers. Not exciting, you know, user-facing features so much as kind of prominent things that are going to mean a whole lot later. Mm. And one of the big things that they started the keynote with was Sundar saying that that Google was transitioning from a company where you searched for answers to a company that helped you do stuff.
Do things of all sorts.
Yeah, not just on your phone, not just in the browser, like helped you with life.
Yeah, and proactively does things. So switching from the you ask for things, it gives you things.
Right.
To proactively and ongoing conversations and offering you things, which is kind of the pinnacle of what they've talked about
for a while.
Last few Google I.O.s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I unfortunately was not able to watch the keynote, even though I was sitting not far away from you guys, because I was editing a video the entire time. So I'm going to serve as the surrogate for the audience in this podcast and say things like, oh, that's interesting. And because all of that is. So are we going to talk about what they rolled out that will help them achieve these new goals or what?
Yeah, so I mean, the big thing where a lot of things, you know, kind of wrapped around it, I guess, started with Assistant. Mm-hmm. Tons of stuff with Assistant going to Google Maps, being able to use it in kind of a car mode, mm-hmm. which you know, people have been saying for years, why isn't Google Assistant better integrated in you know, Google Nav when you're driving? And now it's a proper car mode, you know, that it's got, you know, being able to access music, being able to return to podcasts when you are in the middle of them and driving, you know, having things kind of show up at the bottom of your Google navigation instead of taking up the entire screen so that when you're driving, you're still focusing on the things that you're supposed to focus on. That was kind of a big deal, but it was really just the start of a ton of things going around Google Assistant.
That is a huge update, though, because having spent enough time driving with all of that, it's really frustrating where you can do certain things and then not do them. And it's like really just affects the whole experience and the ability to do everything you expect to be able to do.
Yeah.
And have it work and not go, okay, great. Now I'm, you know, it's ultimately taking people away from ever interacting with their phone, which is a great thing.
When you're driving.
When you're driving,
yeah. Yeah.
Good clarification.
Right. And at the same time, they're also bringing Google Assistant to Waze.
Yeah.
And they're also, just generally, the kind of theme was the barrier to accessing Google Assistant is lower, and it's also just in more places and more conversational in more places.
Yeah.
And also, this has kind of been the ongoing thing and the problem with Google Assistant as a brand is that Google Assistant is just becoming the undercurrent of all smarts happening across Google properties. You're talking about it being in Google Maps, Waze, Google Search. Google Lens is also kind of just the visual version of Google Assistant,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so on and so on. Assistant itself is not a one entity. It's just kind of the smarts behind Google overall, like your interactions with Google as a person.
Yeah, we're starting to see the concept of Assistant being the platform.
Yes.
You know, and that is kind of an important thing, but it's also important that they're not talking about it like that. Like they're not trying to introduce it as its own thing. They're you know, because we did that with Google Now, which never really panned out.
Assistant originally, too.
Right. Where it was its own thing and it had its own feature set and things like that. So that did not work. And so now it's just being integrated into everything in kind of increasingly subtle ways, which I think is pretty good.
One of the things we're going to talk about later is a piece of hardware that reminds me in a lot of ways of the Nexus 5. And as a result, I was watching some old Nexus 5 coverage yesterday in my editing process, and it reminded me just how long ago the seeds for Google Assistant were sown.
Oh, yeah.
And that Google Now stuff goes all the way back to, I think, what, Nexus 4, right? Mm-hmm. And then the Moto X actions before it, the Moto Voice stuff. I mean, this has been germinating for a very long time. So it's cool to see it finally reach a point of maturity where not only is Google Assistant sort of uniform now across devices from mobile devices to home, but now you're going to be able to do more things with it, which I would like to talk about because it's one thing I looked up in time to see.
Go for it.
Samsung Bixby-like
local
device interaction, right? Where you ask Assistant to open apps and... Well, you could already do that. What's the new thing? Like, you can ask Assistant to take a selfie or...
So the big thing that enables all of this at the lowest level and is kind of the next iteration of Assistant as a service is that it's... they figured out how to do all of this processing and handling of specific queries about things that are happening on your device fully on the device.
Without a network connection.
Without a network connection whatsoever. And so we've had a small portion of this with something that you and I like to do, Michael, which is voice to text.
Yes.
Which...
Exclamation point, comma.
Please,
comma, continue, period.
Where, you know, they had this weird disconnect between, you could tell when you had the voice to text that was just happening locally, which is kind of trash, versus what was going up to the server and back just to do voice to text, which is such a simple thing. They've gone several iterations past that now where they're doing all of these actions on the phone. And as we'll talk about later, on home devices even as well, even though they do have an active internet connection, to speed up Google Assistant responses up to 10 times.
Right.
Because, look, even when you have a good network connection, you're talking about, 50 milliseconds of latency each way.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, whatever next steps it takes to get to their server and get back to the server. All of that stuff is kind of imperceptible each step of the way. But when you go to make a query, like something like, you know, they showed a good example of, show me my photos from Yellowstone. That doesn't need to be something that goes all the way to Google servers and comes back to parse that information and then get you to open the app. So now they're showing demonstrations of this all happening on the device. So what they showed was very Bixby-like because it was all about controlling things on your phone. So the examples were like a notification comes in and you say, you know,
read me that text or
you
whatever.
Know, read that to me and then say, reply, my trip was great. And then you just seamlessly transition to show me my photos from Oh, I don't know what that is.
Oh, that's a
palm. Oh, that is a palm phone
vibrating its way off the bedside.
And then, you know, you're talking about a trip with this person and you say, show me my photos from Yellowstone. And then you say, show me my photos with animals.
You don't even say that. You just say the ones with animals.
The ones with animals.
Right. So,
and then you tap on one and you say, send this to Michael.
Right.
And it sends it.
Which is exactly what was promised, like, to keep coming back to Bixby. Like,
exactly.
This was Galaxy S8 or Galaxy S9, I forgot what the Bixby premiere was, S8. And they said, anything you do on your phone with a tap right now, you're going to be able to do with your voice. That was the goal. But it felt Bixby in that it fell so far short of it. I feel like I've seen demos like this at so many IOs specifically, where it's like, now watch, you can have a conversation with the machine. And, like, we go back and forth with this. I'm heavily mitigating my expectations for
to play
when and how
to
much.
Play devil's advocate.
Expect from this.
To continue what Michael's saying, we've seen these demos before. Yes, it was great to see all of that happen on the phone. Perfect. I looked up, I saw the notification bar. They had an active internet connection. Didn't see whether it was actually transferring data or anything like that. I would love to see what really happens when it's completely in airplane mode and there's no way to connect. Because I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as good as they tried to make it out to be. And I still think you know, I do get the odd miss hit off Google Assistant where it doesn't recognize some of the things I'm asking for.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
and that's with a connection to Google servers.
It's not going to be the same, but I think the important part is that when you're doing it all locally, if the voice model is good enough, you find out that it didn't work way faster than sitting there and waiting for the network connection to be the problem, or even to have the query be the problem and you find out later because the response is delayed.
How many times have you done the thing where you dictate the same sentence twice because you think it didn't get in, and then both of those sentences just suddenly appear when you send?
To be clear, we actually did very, very briefly, there was a fail during that demonstration where the first time she gave a command, it didn't quite catch it, and so she gave it again. And I think the impressive thing there was that it happened so fast that I don't think most people noticed it.
Yeah, they were able to gloss right over it.
Right.
And there was also a very interesting, well, several times throughout the demonstration, because this was really rapid fire, and that was kind of their whole point.
Yeah.
She was just, like, going all over the place.
Requests of every kind.
It was like, you know, open this, you know, send that to that person, and reply to this, and switch to that, and it was like, and it was just cycling between all of these things, and you see this happening down. Because you're switching between app to app to app and all these different experiences, it was shown on a Pixel, of course, and it showed the word dictation happening in the bottom right corner of the nav bar, which is interesting because, as we'll talk, it's going away. So I'm not sure where they're going to put those words because the nav bar doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, because there's gestures it with a pill,
but you know, so that's a different thing entirely. But they're showing that it's doing all this processing right down at the bottom of the screen, even as all the different apps are cycling through. And one of the parts of the rapid fire thing is that she's sending messages and sending an email and sending replies to things. And you see the words come across the bottom where it says, reply, my trip was great. I'll tell you all about it. Mm-hmm. And it types out reply and then it deletes that part.
Because it understands it's a command.
And then she goes, send an email to Jessica. And it pulls up and puts Jessica in the thing. She starts talking into the main text. And there's comma. And every time she pauses, it creates a new line.
Mm.
And it also is like, subject line this.
Yeah, and then she says, subject line Yellowstone trip. And you see it type out, it says subject line, and then it fixes itself and sends that up to the subject line. And then you hit send it, and you see it say send it, and then it deletes that and hits the send button.
Right. What?
So that kind of stuff realistically can only happen on the device, and it's ridiculous. They said, what was the voice training model? They said it was like 50 gigabytes or something, or 100 gigabytes at some point, and they got it down to like 150 megabytes or something like that. Absolutely insane.
You know what will be very interesting, though? We saw that demo on a Pixel.
Mm-hmm.
Now you take someone like Samsung
mm-hmm.
with their own Bixby
stuff. And that's the question. They're talking about this being on queue.
Yeah. Then we talk about someone like Huawei, who has all their own on-device AI stuff. At some point, I honestly feel like there's going to become this. It's going to reach this point where those things can no longer actually work together as well as they would, because Google's testing all of this on a Pixel, and it's amazing. And maybe that's the goal. It's like, this to get this full experience, you need a Pixel. But if you then go to something like a Huawei phone, which is, considering that the Pixel is completely niche, and even with what we'll talk about, it's going to remain niche for a considerable amount of time. And it's going to take a while for them to reach that point. What happens when it's on the rest of Android?
Mm. And you have performance differences across phones, too. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, they've got to set some minimum threshold. Where, like, yeah, you're not going to be able to do this on a Moto G9 or whatever.
Sure. And does that need to have a chipset that's got AI built in? And there's so many different variables here.
Yeah, we don't know any of these things yet. Great point.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah, it's kind of...
It's a great demo, but there has to be... It's not just the size of the storage, it's all the other things, too.
Right.
That, you know, could make a big difference.
Motion of the ocean.
Now, Russell, I want to know what you want to talk about the privacy implications of this, and just the general... Google, of course, talked a lot about privacy.
Privacy and security.
And it kind of felt a little tacked on here and there, where each... So, like... When Rick Osterloh came up to talk about the new Nest hardware, his first things he talked about were like, and we have a new privacy policy, and your privacy and security is most important to us. And then now I'm going to jump into this right. pre-planned thing that I had to talk about the entire time.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, in a couple of different ways, privacy and security were kind of talked about all throughout this conference. But one of the things that you and I started talking about as we were leaving the room or leaving the keynote is there's several areas where the demonstrations didn't have the wake word.
Yeah,
you know where they just kept going.
You're right. That's one thing we didn't talk about with this on device stuff is it was an ongoing conversation,
right?
And I don't even think they started it with the wake word.
No, but they could have just hit the assistant button. Sure, like it was something that I would have to go back and watch. But no, there were like it was a feature. They were like, and you don't need to use the wake word for every single thing,
right?
And that's cool, but it also means. As part of this on-device thing, one of the things that you brought up, you said, so Google is always listening now. And I
for more than just the wake
word. For more than just a wake word. And I had to think about that because, no, if you take it in the crudest possible way, Google's the assistant is always listening, but it's listening for the wake word. And so this is different. This is now actively listening for commands. For multiple commands over a set period of time that doesn't require the wake word in order to access it. And that's something very different, and that can be implemented in a couple of different ways, and it's clear that this is something that Google is still kind of working on, but it's a different consent model.
Yeah, it is.
For that to work.
Because that's been the rebuttal to a lot of privacy concerns is like, oh, well, I'm going to put this corporate espionage speaker in my house? No. And they're like, well, no, but unless you say OKG, it's never going to pass any information to the right. server. Now that is changing?
No.
Or it's just listening for a wider array of wake words?
Well, neither. The reason I think that Google is able to get away with this particular set of commands is that none of this stuff ever goes to Google.
Oh, because it's all done.
It's all local.
It's all locally processed.
So that's why I'm saying it's a different consent model. But it requires this conversation because Andrew and I were talking about it this afternoon. It took me a while for my brain to get to where he was because I know logically that the microphone in my Pixel is always waiting for me to say OKG.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always listening to me because I have it set up to do so. But it doesn't send anything to Google until I've said that thing. So the consent model there is that I am physically saying, you know, give me a service and Google is then providing that service. The consent model for what Google is presenting in this next iteration of Assistant is very different because, you are always expecting that service in the way that it was presented. You know, you're always saying, you know, do this, do this, do this. So you're always but the consent model is no longer with Google. The consent model is with the device, because you're expecting that instant response from the hardware under the assumption that that information is then not being sent to Google.
That's an interesting point there as well, because I think as we see the entire scope of voice activation and anything that's AI based, there are going to be enough skeptics out there who won't believe that everything's being done on device. And how do we? Until we have someone who's broken down every bit, and sadly, in the way we the world we live now, until we have somebody who realizes this is all actually a lie, we won't know any different.
Well, it's going to require some pretty thorough analysis from either side, and I think that that's one of the reasons that Osterloh stood up and said, we've got this whole privacy policy thing that has been updated, and you're going to want to check all this stuff out, because Google needs to have all of the answers to these questions in very plain English.
Right.
From the moment this version of Assistant is available, there can't be any room for you know misunderstanding.
I think also part of it, just being a bit of a cynic, when he said that, and the way they positioned it, we're going, you now know what every one of these sensors and these devices and stuff does. Part of it also takes it back to thinking about the Nest we're going to talk about. Those cameras had microphones for a year. And a lot of the stuff I read today talks about how Google didn't tell anybody. And when they got caught, they were like, oh, but it was disabled. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. So it's...
Dramatically different with the hardware product, too.
Yeah. And so the hardware is going to be its own separate mess that we're going to talk about in a minute. But Sundar also made it clear that Google... the privacy system inside of Google itself, even just basic search, is going to be much easier to access, much easier to control, where you're going to be able to see your icon in Google search and click, and your security functions are going to be a top-level thing.
Everywhere you see your little account icon,
right,
you jump straight into the security settings for that app or service right. that you're in.
Which is good. It's a top-level function now, and it should be a top-level function, and so controlling those things it's an important set of steps. But yeah, I mean, Google is going to need very, very clear English for how this stuff works when this new version of Assistant comes out, because as cool as it is, it's going to have a lot of people asking a ton of questions.
And they're creating little offerings to anybody that's skeptical about their security practices with things like having, you know, making the privacy settings more accessible
yeah.
and offering things like incognito mode in Google Maps, which is cool. And offering to have settings to auto-delete the data associated with your account for certain apps after a set amount of time. So you can say to have a rolling deletion 3 months or 18 months from your actions that just deletes just in the back end, a rolling 3 or 18 months after. But they still are going to have skepticism from the people that understand that those things are not set by default. The default is keep everything turned on,
right.
Do not use incognito. And so Google's trying to offer these things to be able to like, look, hey, you have the settings there. You can delete all of the stuff if you want.
Right.
But people are always going to be able to nitpick that, well, you know, by default, you have everything turned on.
Right, and the default settings are going to be a big deal.
Which know. Obviously works the best for normal people that yep. just want the product to work.
Right.
So, moving on just a little bit here. Nest got weirdly bigger today.
Nest became all of the things.
Nest kind of became everything. It really kind of caught me by surprise. We'd seen a leak about the Nest brand being part of the next home hub, the next bigger home hub. But that was kind of burying the lead a little bit. The real deal here is that, you know, Rick Osterloh took to the stage and basically everything that was previously branded Google Home or Chromecast, you know, or any of the previous hardware products that didn't have the Pixel name attached to it, essentially, are part of the Nest family now.
Even the Chromecast, because I didn't spot that part. I thought it just applied to Google Home products.
So they showed a map of all the different products that he was like, and these are all part of the ecosystem now. And it included the Home Hubs. There was a Chromecast up there. There was a ton of different hardware products up there. That basically anything that didn't have the Pixel branding on it was put under the Nest brand, the umbrella today, which I think is really kind of surprising. And also, worth pointing out, you and I both have, in the last 30 seconds, called this thing a Chromecast. Google stopped calling it a Chromecast a year and a half ago.
What do they call it?
It's been the Google Cast.
Synonymous with the just back-end service of right. casting things.
Beyond just it being just a rebranding and, you know, homogenizing a lot of brands under one, it does a much wider thing. First, of course, you know, the Nest brand is... People do know Nest independently of Google as well as part of it because it was its own company in the past.
Definitely.
There's plenty of people out there who, I can understand the reasoning behind it, use Nest thermostats and probably wouldn't consider a Google-branded product for the privacy and security reasons. So it gives them that an alternative, which I think, Andrew, you mentioned earlier when you were talking about like Portal and stuff like that. It gives them that alternative to, okay, we don't need to brand it by Google for anyone who's worried about the Google, especially with all the bad... press in the EU, especially with all the stuff going on in the EU versus Google, it's a good alternative for them. But if you think about something very specific like the Nest Hub Max, which was new, and then the eventual rebrand of the Google Home Max to the Nest Home Max,
and
you put both of them on the shelves, when I wrote the hands-on, I said very clearly, these are completely different product lines, but to consumers and to regular people, they're going to assume that the Nest Hub Max has... just as good as audio as the Nest Home Max because of the Max branding. And when I asked Google that, they literally did not have a response for how they're going to mitigate that. Unless they go and rebrand everything further.
No, it has to be a slow transition.
Yeah.
Where, you know, as we, like, I like to poke fun at it earlier today, that you go to this Google store and everything is still Google Home this, Google Home that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be months and months and months as they get through, well, first of all, get through all the inventory of all the devices and the boxes and right. everything that have been printed that already have all the Google Home branding. But also just a general, they have to do a whole new marketing and advertising consumer consciousness play to get everybody up to speed that Nest is the new thing. And it seems so interesting to me, I think it was Russell and I were talking about this, is that, like, Google Home started this category for Google. And in some ways was the, you know, it was half of the equation along with Amazon, with all of the Echoes things, bringing this idea of the ubiquitous smart home, you know, inexpensive smart home speaker to the masses was Google Home. Yeah. And now that is just gone. And they're using wording like it's the Nest Hub Google Assistant smart display.
Right.
And it's like...
But that's not part of the branding. It's just how they're describing it. That's not part of
the branding, but like it is literally... The Nest Hub is the brand of the device. Google Assistant is what it does, and it is a smart display.
It's almost like they're bringing back Powered by Google.
Yeah.
That the way that they were describing it on stage, like as the more that I heard them say it, the more it sounded like, you know, or Powered by Android, rather.
Right.
Was that, you know, like that, you know, I had kind of...
Or what was they have the Made by Google branding, which they use in advertising for Pixels.
Yeah, they did Pixel Phone by Google.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of what it is. And so it's really more back to our original discussion, talking about Google Assistant being the underlying thing. It's like these run Google Assistant, but they are Nest products.
Right.
And it was already a little confusing. There were Google Homes and Google Hubs and what was a smart display. You know, they still have this smart display brand that is a brand that is the all-encompassing all of these third-party devices that are Google Assistant-enabled smart displays. It's just a very confusing thing. The only common thread is that people know there's Google Assistant. And it's very interesting that, yes, I understand that the Nest brand is very strong, but you know what's the strongest brand? Google. And, you know, where do you put that on the box or as part of the brand?
Question for you guys off the back of it, then. You take, on the one hand, you've got Google, Nest, and what we're just going to call this mess that's still to be unraveled, which the company themselves may not quite know exactly where all of this is headed, although they did say to me, you know, this has been a couple of years in the works ever since they were brought back into the fold. They've been really working, well, so February last year. Since then, they've been working on this branding. And then you take all of that mess, and then on the other hand, you've got Amazon, who, I give them credit, have... They have their Echo products, and as despite their Echo products having multiple different lines, you know it's an Echo. You know it's an Alexa product. It's really, it's completely categorized, and it's really clear. They don't try and put this branding against third-party products and stuff like that.
You either have an Echo or a Fire, and like those are the two things.
You have all of that, and then you've got your Ring and everything like that. When you're in, if you're a regular consumer in a store, do you guys think the confusion of all of these Nest products and the way this is all being branded might end up driving people towards the alternative because it's a lot easier to understand? Because having worked in retail, if it's easier to understand and you're in a Best Buy and you're trying to make a purchase like this, most people will go, I get that, I understand it. And it's not like everyone's like, I have to have the Google Assistant one. It's...
Well, I think a lot of it will fall on the shoulders of the marketing people and the advertising people to convey this message and on Google to actually see it through, right? I mean, we've seen not just Google, but a lot of companies will say like, hey, we're doing this rebrand, and then they don't put the money behind it necessary to push it into people's minds. Like, no, you call this a Nest now. And as a result, you have this just massive conflagration of confusion. And then, yeah, everyone just starts buying, Echoes. So... I think that is a question that can't be answered right now, but that's definitely a priority that they're probably taking very seriously and getting ready to spend a lot of money on commercials.
Yeah, it makes sense to have, if you were starting from a clean slate, Nest equals home products makes sense.
Sure.
The problem is that for as messy as Google, the Google Home, Smart Display, Google Assistant stuff is, it's got the brand cachet and it's been around.
Yeah, finally. It's finally gotten there almost.
Where, right, like, where normal people buy these things, especially with how cheap they are.
Right.
You know, well, everybody's got a Google Home Mini. If they don't, you know, if they're not an Alexa household, they have a $29 Google Home Mini or whatever.
Well, they bought something and got $400 free.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They just gave these things away. And on top of Chromecast, which is already a little messy. So, I don't know. That's going to be messy for like another year, 2 years, exactly. Whatever, 5 years.
We got to wait and see it.
Well, yeah. But the mess gets worse.
What's that?
It was actually something that we didn't learn about until later this evening. As part of this weird transition where Osterloh was kind of in charge of this whole setup, the Works with Nest program has officially been shuttered. The Works with Nest program, for people who don't know, has been a third-party integration program that Nest has had basically from the beginning for third-party manufacturers that wanted to integrate into Nest accounts. So people who made doorbells or thermal sensors that you could put in your house or things that would integrate with the Nest ecosystem in some way that could be applied to Nest's in a, you know, kind of grander intelligence scheme. For example, Hue lights are part of the Works with Nest program such that when the Nest thermostat detects that you are away, Hue lights will turn on and off at random intervals to give the illusion that you are home. Right. Even though you, when your thermostat is set to away, like the Hue integrates with that. That whole thing was actually started in the Works with Nest program.
So the shuttering of that program means what?
That third-party manufacturers have to go directly through Google to seek some kind of integration with the products. And it also means that there's not a dedicated list of products where Nest users can go, I know for a fact that these things work with my thermostat really, really well. Because that was what the product list was Nest said, if you buy these things, not only are they great because, you know, we said so, but they work in very specific integrated ways with the Nest platform.
There's a bigger issue because I read at the same point of the Works with Nest being shuttered is the Works with Google Assistant program, the two parts of it. First is the privacy part of it. Now, in the past, you could go, I want to integrate these things, great. And you've given Google that regulatory permission. At this point, very specific third-party partners will be able to access your data, but you've got to go and approve every single one as part of their privacy changes.
Right.
But the bigger one, if this, then that. Because this, in theory, at least what I was reading earlier, could also be the death of if this and the integration within Nest. And everything else.
It's possible. If this, then that has a pretty strong backing with other Google products. So it would
it was just specifically called out in that article. I could be wrong. So
it just strikes me as odd that Google would turn away from that because if this, then that works with so many other Google products. But the one positive upswing there is the way that you no longer will require both a Nest account and a Google account. In order to make some of this stuff
you
work,
understand that's a perfect example of you understand how it can be helpful from a like a seamless building this whole Nest ecosystem where it, you know, the just works part,
right?
But for people that want to tinker and set up a bunch of different third-party services and all kinds of things like that and really make it happen, that's going to be more difficult for a little bit. And then hopefully more integrated for probably a smaller number of products and services, but more integrated going forward.
I hope that that's the case. And I think it probably will be. I just think it goes into the what you were bringing up earlier, is that what it really comes down to is that the next year, basically, for this whole Nest situation is going to be kind of clumsy.
Yeah.
It's going to be really hard to talk about these products.
Yeah. It's going to be kind of interesting.
So I just pulled up. I want to bring this up quickly because I thought I read this. This was with Rishi Chandra, and this is through Variety or whatever, but the key thing is, Chandra said that the company planned to replace much of If This Then That's functionality with its own Google Assistant routines.
Mm-hmm.
So it will break If This Then That integrations for anyone who's using it with Nest in the meantime.
If anybody could flip-flop on this, it'd be Google.
Yeah. The other
part... No, so they want to replace it. That doesn't mean that both won't be possible.
Sure.
This literally called out and going, it will break it in the immediate future.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, if this and that integrates into way more other Google products, I doubt that they're just going to flat out turn it off. Like that seems kind of unlikely. It's not impossible, and goodness knows Google has done weirder stuff in the past. But if this and that, you know, is it works with so many other Google products, it would be weird for it to just automatically stop working with one or two.
So something that's most interesting when we're talking about all this really deep in the weeds third party stuff, but the one new hardware announcement in this realm was the Nest Hub Max, alongside rebranding the current Google Home Hub as the Nest Hub. Makes sense, I guess.
Sure.
Didn't talk about third-party anything.
No.
It was fully about buy this product for $229, put it in your kitchen for the, you know, that's kind of what they're pitching it as, and look at all this stuff that it does right out of the box.
Yep.
With your Google, you know, with your Google account, with your current Nest products and your other Google Home products and your Android phone, and look at how this stuff just works. We had a really cool demonstration that showed a lot of the things that it does, Russell, and none of that was third party.
No, we got a solid integration into facial recognition, where if you walked past the Nest Hub Max...
Because it has a camera, Google Home Hub / Nest Hub.
Yeah, so you know, it caught your face, and very much like Voice Match will only give you responses from your account based on your voice. You can get, notifications and you know, things that apply directly to your account and your traffic and things like that. When you walk by, it presents you information that is directly relevant to you.
Yeah. It's like an antitrust.
Steve Jobs
walks into a room and there's artwork changes.
Yeah, well, and because it ties into Google Photos, it's literally like that. Because when the woman walked by, her photos of her dog showed up on the display. So so literally like antitrust. That's a very good point. I haven't seen that in a while.
Doesn't hold up.
Oh, I'm sure it doesn't. There's no way it does. But the whole... point there was being able to kind of interact in the same way that the voice match did, to be able to do, you know, things back and forth. We also got some Duo integration, where not only can you do the Duo calls because the video chat, but actually someone can leave you a video message, through Duo. And when you walk by, it gives you a little pop-up that says, hey, you got a voice, a video message from this person.
Yeah,
and
that's
view it or respond to it or just call them back. Which was kind of cool. And the camera is this ultra wide angle.
127 degrees.
Yeah.
127 degrees field of view.
Captures a pretty decent field of view. And Google's using some software that it totally didn't steal from Facebook to kind of follow you digitally around the room. So it's essentially, using software Zoom. To creep in on you, and then as you walk around the room, it just moves.
Come and go out of the frame, it changes the framing.
Yeah,
it
changes the framing.
Which is also kind of interesting. You pointed out that it didn't do a fantastic job.
It is not as good as Facebook Portal at this particular feature. Now, granted, there are so many other reasons to not use Facebook Portal that nobody's ever going to know that. But this is clearly something that they saw on Facebook Portal and went, hey, we can do this. And the version that they produced is not anywhere near as good as the thing that Facebook Portal is doing. But it's so far from the point.
I just want to talk about that camera for a second. Because when I went into a slightly deeper dive with the...
Yeah, talk about the other thing that it's not just for video calls and facial recognition.
Talk about the actual camera part of it. Yeah, it's got the 127 degree field of view and it does... the regular things you expect from a Nest camera. But whilst the Nest Cam Indoor, your Nest Cam IQ, and pretty much all the other Nest Cams do the security part really well, Google went to great lengths to tell me that, no, this is not a replacement for anything. And the reason they're trying to make sure it's definitely not, there's no night vision in it. Well, so sure. It's not meant to be a dedicated security solution.
But I don't think we mentioned this yet. When you have a Nest Hub Max, you can tap into it just like a Nest camera anywhere else in your house.
Yeah, it works in the same way.
You can push to it and say, tell me what's going on in my kitchen right now.
Perfect, agreed. Yeah. The other flip side is as well, and this is where I think it's going to be interesting 6 months from now, you'll be able to watch everything you can do in the Nest app, not only from the Nest app with the Nest Hub Max, but from the Google Home app as well. Right. So I can, we're about, I think we'll see both of those apps start to merge.
Start to integrate.
By this time next year, we'll only have one app for it. And I think that might be a wider thing, that we see whatever was being done under the Nest thing is now just going to be done all within the single Google Home app, in that bid to reduce the number of apps you have.
Now, there are two other features to this thing that immediately make it worth buying, in my opinion. One is actually a voice feature, which is going to be a part of the home, the Nest Hub as well. When you set a timer or an alarm and it goes off, you do not have to say, okay, G, stop.
Oh, yeah.
You just say stop. While the alarm is going, the microphone is listening. And so you just say stop, and the alarm will stop. You don't have to use the wake word.
That's on all Google.
Yes, but it's
all Nest Home products. Yeah, now.
any of the things will have it work. The other thing I thought was it worked better than I thought it was going to. You can watch TV and listen to music and stuff on this thing, and in doing so, if you need it to pause for a second, you just hold out your hand, and it will detect your hand and pause. Mm. And then if you want, when you want it to play again, you just repeat that action. And and the woman did it in multiple positions in the room.
Nonchalantly.
It was very casual, and it worked every time. I was really surprised.
Well, this was on the video, right?
No, this was in the video, but we saw a live demonstration of it.
And it worked just as well.
I was surprised at how well it worked. I did not expect it to after seeing the demonstration. And the demo that she gave, we were in a room where the light was weird. Because light was coming in through one side, and it was set up kind of like a little mini kitchen on purpose to kind of give that aesthetic. But like that's the deal, right? Like something's happening, and I've got two hands full of meatloaf, and my kids are running through the room, and something's on fire, but I'm watching Babylon 5.
Yeah,
I can reach my hand up, and whatever I'm watching stops. And I can deal with and I can drop my meatloaf.
It's kind of how the gestures things are going. LG G8 should have been
right. Oh, no, man. That's exactly right.
Oh, man. No, I said that as well, and I was like, we are not far away from being able to do things like turn your hand to change volume and things like that. One thing I do love about the Nest Hub, which is coming to any of the other smart displays, is the YouTube TV guide. I use YouTube TV every single day.
Yeah,
on all my products, and when you have a dirty hand, I don't mind touching my smart display and stuff like that. It's easy enough to clean off. I don't really want to be taking a greasy hand and using it on my phone because it's going to be a nightmare to clean that.
Right.
Just having a guide on display that I can go and scroll through programs as I'm cooking or whatever, I never thought something so simple could bring me so much joy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is so useful.
The Nest Hub Max is introducing a lot of these new things that are, like you said, trickling down to other devices as well. Because it has a larger screen and it has the camera, and they're thinking about where it's going to be positioned in the house, it's introducing all of these new features, more touch interaction, the facial recognition, hand recognition, stuff like that, that was obviously not going to happen on the previous Home Hub because it didn't have a camera, but also because it had a smaller screen.
Yep.
It was really more just for showing you things and you talk to it.
Right.
This is introducing, like, there are good way, like, there are ways that make sense to interact with things based on the thing you're trying to accomplish and what it gives back to you.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a hand gesture. Sometimes that's a touch. Sometimes that's speech. This does all three, in different capacities.
The one caveat that is going to require some additional testing in a room that isn't a weird plaster hut that Google assembled overnight. Audio didn't sound super great. It got loud. It was not.
So that's the thing. Just like Nirav was saying earlier, just because the thing is large doesn't mean it sounds great. This is $229.
Right.
It with a 10-inch display, multiple array microphones, and the camera. It's tough to think that the audio could be great.
I don't know how not great it is, because like I said, the room was weird.
It's not a Google Home Max.
It's not a Google Home Max. $400
speaker.
But I wouldn't expect this to be. I wouldn't even expect this to be as good as the current generation Echo Show.
Sure.
Because the current generation Echo Show, the speakers on that thing punch kind of a little above its weight, which is really the entire Echo line right now. The speaker on this thing is going to require some additional testing before I pass any kind of verdict. But it was certainly loud. But the demonstration that we got was not great.
I was in a room with somebody playing some interesting punk rock, and he put it to 10 and went, "Turn that down, turn that down." I think it was 7 or 8, and he was like, "Yeah, it's not very good." One point I wanted just to touch on what you said, Andrew, I wanted to bring up is, it's $229, and you are getting a smart speaker, you're getting a smart display, you're getting a Nest camera. This thing doesn't do any of these things exceptionally well. There are better dedicated smart displays on the market. There are better smart speakers on the market for audio, like a home Max, and they've got the better cameras. So you shouldn't go into this expecting it to have the best of all of these things.
No,
it just does all of them relatively well. And I think if it's going to be at an entry point to all of these different bits, it delivers on that particular promise.
And as long as the display is close to as good as the Nest Hub, that is going to take some getting used to.
And it does look pretty good.
It does look pretty good. The Nest Hub display is ridiculous.
And they made a big deal about it at the time.
Yeah.
And interestingly, they continued to talk about it with the Nest Hub Max being a great photo frame, for lack of a better
term. Yeah.
But they didn't talk about all of, like, the screen tone shifting and all that kind of stuff they talked about with the original Home Hub.
Right.
But with the original Home Hub, that's all they could do.
That's all
they could do. There was nothing. But it was like, here's a smart display that does a few things.
But it's worth highlighting that is the feature on the Home Hub for a reason. Like, there are no other home displays that come even close.
Yeah.
The display on that thing matches the lighting in the room and just disappears.
And also worth noting, now only $129
for the
Nest Hub, former Home Hub.
Get yourself a mint one.
Which is what the original Google Home launched at.
Yep.
And now you're getting a speaker about as good as that
and
this ridiculous display.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. So as the pair, when you think about that, the speaker may not be fantastic on the Home Hub Max, $229, like, makes sense. If you don't see the value there, you absolutely have to see the value in $129 for the Nest Hub.
Totally. I mean, even just as a digital photo frame that I gave to a family member, like, $130 is what I have spent on digital photo frames for family members.
And they're not very good.
And they're not great. Yeah. They're you know, kind of.
And they're not even
plastic.
Great with Google Photos anyway.
No. To be able to set my grandparents up with a digital photo frame that I could control from my house, just be like, this folder, and just constantly put new photos of the family in there to rotate through them, they would be just the happiest creatures on earth.
Question. The closest I come to caring about any of this is that I have a Lenovo smart display that I bought for my parents predominantly to function as a photo frame that you talk about, and they love it, and they love the Google Home aspect of it as well. How likely do we think it is that manufacturers will continue to produce things like that if those of us who kind of find the Nest Home Hub design, like a lot of Google design, kind of just not really my thing? What if I want to buy a cool bamboo-backed Lenovo thing? Are these partners going to
keep
building
things? So,
yeah.
I actually asked that question earlier.
Yeah.
Again, very, very uncommittal answer, because it was like, you know, we'll continue to offer whatever features we can to our third parties.
Yeah.
Really, I think as we're seeing, just like with all of the demonstrations and everything, as much as Google has always been, if you look at like something like an Android example, well, yeah, it's all about our partners and stuff like that. I think we're about to see Google go, hey, this is what happens when you buy with us. And yeah, sure, if you guys, you know, we'll offer whatever options there are there. But to get some of the, you know, facial match stuff and things like that, would not confirm whether you needed very specific hardware that had been defined by Google. And my kind of gut feeling is you do, which I think would make sense. But they also said you need an incredible amount of compute power and all of these other things in the background that we can't go into. Which I think is going to be their cop-out excuse to go, sorry, this only happens when you buy first-party products. The resulting being, we'll see less and less of those third-party products happen.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're not done with the hardware train yet. I think each one of us here has spent a little bit of time with a shiny new Pixel.
I'm going to peel some plastic off this very
let's
loudly. Do it.
Now get real close to the microphone. Let's...
Oh, yeah, that's cellophane. Nice. Real great.
Smell that chemical.
Yeah. So this is the Pixel 3a XL.
And the Pixel 3a.
And the Pixel 3a.
The purplish one.
First, what a terrible name.
What?
Why?
Pixel 3a?
I don't think it matters.
What else was it going to be?
Not a clue, but...
they might as well have just been like, this is the Pixel 3... The good one and the cheap one. And you want to know what the difference between the good one and the cheap one is? Because none of us can explain it. And that's kind of the thing that's fascinating, is that this phone is in some cases, $400 cheaper than the normal Pixel. And there aren't a ton of differences externally between these things, like holding them side by side, feeling them in your hand. Like, you can look at a spec sheet and go, okay, one of these is glass and the other is plastic. But holding them,
they did a darn good job with the plastic.
It's not obvious. Like, it's really the grippy texture that you're used to on the back of the Pixel 3 is still very much there. It still very much feels like glass up top. It is not easy to tell that this is a cheaper Pixel in
any
way.
It's definitely not $400 cheaper.
No. Yeah. It's really kind of fascinating. Now, no wireless charging.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera is the same physical hardware, but Michael, you had a separate conversation about that there are some actual camera differences.
Right. So the camera is the same. It's not just the same sensor. It's the same module. Like the lens, every single thing about this camera is
identical. And
you
look at it,
to
the
Pixel
3. From the outside, it looks the exact same.
Right.
It's all the way through.
The difference comes when you go downstream from it. Of course, one of the biggest differences on this device is that it has, instead of a Snapdragon 845 at the heart of it, it was 845 for Pixel 3, right?
Yep.
It is a Snapdragon 670, right? So it's a mid-range processor, which means it has a different image signal processor, and also there's no Pixel Visual Core.
But it still has the Spectra image processor inside it, though.
The Spectra 250, yeah, but it's not the same, right? It's not the same.
I think I haven't retested the camera, but from what I've seen, there's barely any difference
in
the overall output.
Here's the thing. The performance is, I have shot Pixel 3 next to Pixel 3a for 24 hours now. I have almost never been able to tell a difference in the output side by side, from night sight to video stabilization to the portrait mode, which is still improbably good for a single lens phone. And I do not like fake portrait mode at all. And I really like it on the Pixel 3 and I like it on this. So it's amazing what they were able to achieve. And I did have a long conversation with it. You know the one difference I was able to see? When you're taking a portrait mode shot, this thing punches in a little bit more. We were talking about this before.
So it zooms in a little bit more.
It zooms in. The 3A zooms in about maybe 15 to 20% more.
It definitely already punched in to start with.
Right. And so I'm like, why did you do that? And they were like, well, we knew that customers didn't want to sit there waiting for long processing times on photos, which you already are waiting a couple more seconds on 3A than you are on 3. So what they did was we punched in a little bit more, and now we don't have to process any of that fake bokeh around the edges of the image because we've zoomed in a little bit more. So they're using all a bunch of tricks like that to constantly sort of walk the line between, okay, our customer wants a Pixel experience. How much of a wait time will they put up with for that? And how much of a quality degradation will we be willing to deal with? And it's so close from a camera perspective. It's the best phone camera you can buy at this price point.
100%.
Without question.
And they actually, they use that exact thought process, it feels, across the hardware.
Yeah.
Because all of the things that you interact with feel very Pixel 3 in terms of the buttons are nice and clicky. The hardware itself feels solid. The screen looks pretty good because, let's be honest, the Pixel 3 and 3 XL screens aren't, you know, amazing to start with.
Correct.
And the fingerprint sensor is still there the exact same way. And the haptics are still good.
The squeeze to Google Assistant is still there.
You know, all of that stuff you interact with, it's the same fast charging. The batteries are effectively the same size. You know, there's small differences.
2915 versus 3000, really the same.
And whatever, 3520 versus 3700. Those functional things are basically the same carried down. So It's just those couple of spec things, losing the stereo speakers, gaining a headphone jack.
You still have stereo speakers that just moved.
Right. Not the front fire. Yeah, right. You've gained a headphone jack in the process.
Yes.
You know, lost the, you know, the ultimate level of build quality and lost a little bit of screen quality.
You've lost the ingress protection as well.
Wireless charging, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But those are edge things when you're talking about saving $400.
Right.
I have a very fundamental question to ask about this, because you take everything they've put in the Pixel 3 and what they put in the Pixel 3a, either their margins were incredibly high on the Pixel 3, or they're loss leading on this.
Yeah, this
is the margins are high on the Pixel 3, but just even, like they are in every $900.
Even with the launch pricing of this, I'm struggling to see how they're going to make, even if they sell a whole ton of volume, make a lot of money. Maybe it's not about making a lot of money. Maybe it's actually about setting a benchmark for mid-range and going, you no longer need to go and buy the $1,000 flagships. Here's what you can get in the $400
I think that part of it, sorry, Russell, really quickly, I think the part of it is, as you just do a perfect little bar of soap twirl of this thing, and
Thank you, my friend.
It looks exactly like a Pixel 3. The camera, like you said, the camera module, same. Fingerprint sensor, same. All of these things are shared items. The Snapdragon 670, they're sweeping them up off the factory floor. They have so many of these things. The same amount of RAM and storage. All of these things are all just bargain basement price components. And then you cut out the really high cost of making a very precision cut glass and metal exterior. I doubt that they're making much money on the thing, but I don't think they're throwing money in the hole there.
I think once you consider what their promotional, if they're going to use this to cut a lot of the promotional pricing and stuff like that. The
promotional stuff is like, that doesn't factor into on a per unit basis what they're making here. The when you think about this thing as in a single device, there's nothing here that costs much money. We were talking earlier about how the Nokia 7.1 is kind of the closest thing-ish, even though there's not really anything that competes directly with these. That's $350. That thing is built better than this, has a better-looking display than this, and has higher-end specs. And you know Nokia is not losing money on every single one of those. It doesn't have the camera and all the Google stuff, but like that thing's $350.
Fair play.
You can make some pretty damn good phones for about $400 now. You're right. They're not making a ton of, this is like a brand marketing exercise.
You want to talk about availability?
Lots of new places.
Yeah.
The way, you know, the Pixel line.
Speaking of a brand marketing exercise.
Right.
Get the things out there.
Like the Nexus line before it, the Pixel line had historically been a Verizon exclusive. Mm. So this has been kind of a weird shift for this phone, and in fact, also with the Pixel 3. The Pixel 3 will now be available in T-Mobile and Sprint, where it
had US Cellular
and US Cellular, and the Pixel 3a will be available in all of those stores and all of those retailers, as well as two or three other places.
Yeah. The only one that's missing is AT&T.
AT&T. Well, AT&T gets the 3A.
What?
Oh, does it?
No.
What? I thought I had seen that.
No.
I thought they just said, and it works on AT&T.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it works on AT&T. Right.
If you buy it from the Google store, you will work on AT&T.
Right. Right. And the reason this is important is because I don't know what the latest figures are, but at least a year ago, the figures were that 80 to 85% of U.S. consumers still bought their devices from their carrier.
Oh, yeah.
So if you listen to this internationally, it might be confusing to why this is such a big deal. This is huge.
Yeah.
And also, just for the record, we understand that overseas markets have a lot better options at this price point. In the U.S., you had to choose between the Nokia 7.1 and the Moto Z3 Play at this price point for phones worth mentioning. So that's why this is so huge.
We talked about this when the Z3 Play came out, as this was a really, you know, and everybody was like, well, they just partnered with Verizon or whatever. It's like, yeah, because they needed to fill this price point. Mm-hmm. It was going to come down to whatever it's going to be like $15 to $20 a month. They needed to fill that price point. And yes, this doesn't have a lot of competition. It's kind of in this no man's zone between, you know, being above the budget and way below the flagship where people just don't care what price it is. But carriers want to fill that slot.
Sure.
Well, and they want to be able to offer good. Yeah.
It's
like not some trash thing.
Keep in mind that this is going to be the phone that most people are going to walk into a T-Mobile store and see $0 down, $5 a month on top of their plan for to have this phone. Like, you know, ballpark. I'm sure that those aren't the actual prices, but like that's...
Yes, yeah, $16 a month. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, nothing compared to a brand new iPhone or a brand new Samsung.
Right.
Even know, the Pixel 3.
And no person behind the counter is going to look at this and say, like, the weird thing about this thing is that the camera is stupidly good. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to be the thing is that, you know, this is a killer camera for this price. And there's so much user data right now that suggests that that is a thing that people genuinely care about. The camera quality on the phone. And so I really think that this is even more than a brand exercise. I think that this is a potentially pretty significant play because I just can't think of anything else that competes with this.
Like, the thing. Yeah, you know, you're right.
Interesting thing about the Pixel 3 camera or the Pixel 3a camera is I think we can... Like, I'm not spending anywhere near enough time, but based on everything I've been reading and stuff like that, you could potentially look at this is just an excellent camera, not an excellent camera for this price.
No, just...
Oh, yeah.
Just good. And that's a very fundamental thing where, if I'm going to bring some non-US thoughts to this, that thing will trounce just about anything, or very close to it, at the price point offered in the UK. Looking at the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Now, if you're able to suddenly say to someone, go, oh my God, I've seen all of these pictures, everyone tells me the Pixel 3 is great, and they're like, hey, it's $35 a month. Oh, that's a bit much. But hey, how about a Pixel 3a and it does everything you... Because it will be sold as... Salespeople are going to go, what's the easiest way? Yeah, it's got the same camera. None of the differences matter. It's right. Got the same camera because the hardware is the same. Oh, it's only this? What's the difference? Oh, a couple of bits, but it doesn't matter. Look at it. It's such a great phone. This will probably... This could be their biggest ever play in phones, in my opinion.
It's certainly possible. A couple of people earlier today... likened it back to the early days of the Nexus,
mm-hmm.
Because the Nexus line was, you know, was a decent phone for the price, and then the price was always pretty low. But I think that you nailed it in what you were saying is that this is not, from what we've seen so far, this is not a good phone for the price. This is a good phone. Like this is, and it's especially a good camera.
Yeah.
And
that it's such an interesting inversion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nurov said, how often do we say like, well,
for the price.
But usually we're talking about the camera specifically because right. Like, wow, the build quality is pretty good. Display is pretty good. The phone works like a phone. It's pretty fast enough. You know, the camera kind of sucks, but it's $300. This is like, well, a couple things are not as great, and I'd like it to look better. But, right. This is the best camera you can get on a phone for a lot of people.
The marketing that they gave us a tease of it was the photo comparison.
The iPhone 10.
The Pixel 3a and an iPhone 10 night mode.
Destroys it.
Sick burn.
This $400 phone is going to trash a lot of other phones in low light.
Absolutely.
And a lot of those other phones have $1,000 price tags on them right now.
If we look at all the other phones that are coming out recently or still to come out, there are a lot of Google's partners who I think you said earlier will be kept up at night by this phone. More importantly, I think we might see Apple go, I know it's an Android Central podcast, but to bring some of
the other ones. They just can't go this low.
No, but I think they'll start to see, yeah, the iPhone XR is never going to be this priced, but you're going to start to see some seriously competitive pricing on it.
Yeah. Because
this thing could take eat the XR's biscuit as well. If anyone was looking at it without looking at platform agnostic.
And I should point out, Apple's been this low before with the iPhone SE.
Well, that was still what?
Exactly. It was $399.
I thought it was $499.
$499
started. The base model was $399.
It was $399.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They've always sold, you know, old, you know, two or three generation old that are pretty close.
Right, but then we can't, like, we'll be talking all night if we bring those in. This was the SE was brand new, started at $399 and was
that clearly didn't work for them.
A lot of people picked up the SE.
A lot of people still asked.
Did they make three more generations.
They did not. I mean, it's certainly a valid point.
They also paused the iPad Mini for a while and brought it back.
That's very true.
It's not an indicator of failure. Go ahead.
It's also worth pointing out that Apple, from a financial perspective, saw a pretty significant cut to its adoption rate this last quarter in people picking up new phones, because mm-hmm. they're real expensive right now. Mm-hmm. And as I went around talking to folks today about this phone, this is a splash in the bucket, but a ton of developers were super excited about this thing because it immediately for them became the phone that they recommended to friends.
Absolutely.
I would, short of somebody saying to me, hey, I need a Galaxy S10 or, I want the latest Samsung, the latest Huawei, maybe the latest OnePlus. Short of those three phones, there's pretty much, I'm not going to recommend someone buys a Pixel 3 over that.
No.
I'd like them to buy a 3A. This would pretty much be the go-to phone for 95% of people.
I believe Andrew, in that way, and I believe Andrew wrote an editorial addressing this earlier today.
I may have.
In that way, this is very much, reminds me very much of what the Nexus 5 was. And Russell, you touched on it before. Like, man, it's a lot of phones on the market back in those days. Nexus 5 did a lot of things right at $349. And certainly enough of them right for me to recommend it to a ton of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as we had mentioned, we were talking about the differences between the 3 and the 3A, we'd compare the XL models too. There are lots of little complaints that you have with the 3 and 3XL, mostly because you hold it to a higher standard at its higher price point when you compare it to the great competition around it. This, the 3A and 3AXL, don't have much competition around it, first of all. But also, it just has the same shortcomings, basically, as the higher-end models. And you just can't complain about them at half the price.
Yeah,
exactly. Because everything else it offers at that price is ridiculously compelling.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a question, and I don't know the answer to it. What do you guys think comes closest, overall, to this device? Like, if you were to recommend
Nokia 7.1 is the only thing I can think of in the US.
So if that's the case, then the 7.1 still gives us Android One, which is close to the Pixel experience.
The build quality is better.
What, 2 years of guaranteed software updates?
At this point, one
instead
more
of three.
Because all right, it's getting older.
An inferior camera, to be sure.
Oh yeah.
What else?
Like, you don't get the good haptics, you don't get I don't know if it has the same level of fast charging.
So is it okay? So like, and it certainly doesn't have wireless charging. So like, is there any situation where you recommend the Nokia 7.1 over this?
This thing trounces it.
But I agree entirely on that same point. Sorry.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
And what else is there? I guess is the rest of the question.
Question is, take something like a OnePlus 6T at 560,
right?
Or a Pixel 3A.
Which compares to the XL, which is 480.
Or the 3A XL. Or even the 3... Or you say the 3A XL versus the OnePlus 6T. I would recommend the 3A XL.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then this isn't just the $400 market. You're looking at the $500, $600 market where it's... The line gets blurry at $600 for this still. Like for
it
phones.
Still punches at something much higher. And you're like, whoa. To the point where, does it start to eat in the own Pixel 3 market share? And it's like, you know what I mean? Like,
Google's happy to take that situation, obviously.
A couple things, just so that we don't get... So I don't feel like such a boosterist for a hot second. The battery life is untested so far. Pixel 3 was certainly not an outperformer in that regard. So not expecting wonderful things, though I don't know much about the efficiency of the 670. You do lose the dual selfies. The selfie camera is not as wide on the 3A. They went right down the middle, though. They had a 75 degree and a 97 degree on the Pixel 3 and the XL. They went with an 84 degree on this one.
Of course. that's solid, though.
It makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to go.
It is. And a couple other things I would like to test out before we... before I really decide.
Before we put a crown on this thing.
Right, that now this is going to be the thing that I do recommend to everybody instead of what I do now, which is like, can I give you a OnePlus, can I recommend this OnePlus 5T or this,
right.
6. This is, before we do that, I just want to spend another few days with it. But if it performs, I said this in the video, if it performs as advertised, man, this is going to change this entire sector of the market, including, as you say, Russell, $100 or $200 on either side of the $400 mark.
And one thing we have to remember, though, because I agree with you, it does take more time. We all thought that the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL were fast and efficient and stable,
right,
and had no bugs, and the apps were all fantastic on it. And 6 months later, still not that great.
Right.
Even after several updates and lots of changes, the camera is still not fast. It is buggy. There is instability. The battery life is not great. There are all these little things. Of course, things you can look past a little bit when it's $400 less. But if any of those things are present here, they will be revealed in a shorter amount of time, running on the same amount of RAM and
lower end. Just to talk on that RAM for a second.
Yeah.
You look at the rest of Android. 6, 8, 10, 12, God knows when we'll get to a terabyte at this point. We're not far off, let's be honest. Pixel 4. Pixel 3, 4. Same with the 3 and 3 XL. Yet Android itself consistently uses more and more RAM with every update. With all of these things they're talking about, computational power with Google Assistant on, because this is obviously going to have Assistant on the phone. They've gone with 4 gigs of RAM, which I don't think they could have gone more than that because of price, but also because they can't knock their own Pixel 3. 6 to 12 months from now, is it going to be still be usable? Like, is it going to be usable? Is it going to, will it have turned into non-Pixel devices? What happens with your Chinese OEMs full of so much software that the thing is so buggy that you just want to take it and throw it off a balcony?
That's a legit concern, and I'll add on to that that the one thing I'm genuinely let down about is the 64 gig option is your only option, because this thing came out
another
of the box.
Reason why they save money and can actually make money on this thing,
right?
Because I'm surprised they're doing three colors
coming out of the box, and restoring it from my Pixel 3 backup. This thing has 23 of those gigs are already claimed. You back up to Google Photos, whatever, but, you know...
It doesn't have unlimited original quality Google Photos backups either.
No, just high quality.
That is a perk you lose.
Didn't know that was still a perk on regular Pixel.
It's still a perk. Lifetime.
Lifetime unlimited original
quality? A lifetime, 2021, isn't it?
No, a lifetime of the device, so whenever it goes EOL.
At unlimited quality?
At original unlimited quality, yeah.
I mean, excuse me, that's what I meant, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah...
Little things.
Yeah. But, man, again, look pretty easy to swallow.
Verdict isn't there yet, but dang, it's a lot easier. Yeah. When you're recommending to regular people where price is such a higher factor than when we talk about phones internally, it makes it so easy to want to recommend it.
So I have a question for you guys. It's not 3N. It's somewhat a rapper's way to start rapping a bit. There was so much happened at I.O. today. Big, small, huge, tiny, little microcosm announcements that, as Russell said at the very beginning, won't see the benefit of for 6 to 12 months. Biggest announcement, or your favorite announcement from today?
Easy. Pick one. My favorite announcement from today, or rather the thing that I think is probably the most impactful, is all of the stuff that got surrounding speech-to-text. Which for the uninitiated, we got a range of things. One is live transcriptions, live captions in any form of video coming to Android Q. So if live video is playing, it could be...
And happening offline.
Happening offline. Could be one of Mr. Mobile's videos. Could be a phone call that's coming in. Could be, you know, anything like that. You can push the volume rocker and push this button. And any audio that's coming from the phone will have captions. Cool. Which is super, super cool. There's also a way to integrate that into, not Duplex, but the auto answering system in Pixel. So that in a way that is not similar enough, but a reasonable facsimile of the system that deaf people use to communicate via phones, through that auto answer system, being able to use Google Assistant to live transcribe and have the things that you want to say typed into a keyboard and actually spoken from that answering system to the person who is on the other end of the call is super important. And then just a tremendous amount for speech impaired people
to be able to use Google Assistant in the future by having them speak for hours into a test system that Google is using in order to create, you know, very kind of niche case, small group transcriptions for people that really need it. But it's impossible to get those things at scale because there may be only, you know, a couple hundred thousand people in the world that have that particular speech impediment. Mm. And that you know, so Google has like a whole dedicated effort toward that. And I found all of that, you know, in this kind of umbrella, just incredibly powerful for just the general future of enabling so many different people to use their phones in really important ways.
Even the, just to add on to that, would be the things where you're in developing countries, where it's the translations, where it's like, hey, there's this big sign that's written in English, but I'm in, you know, I'm in rural India and I can't understand it, but I can get it all translated back to me in my own language.
They showed us a video of an Indian woman who did not know how to read, who'd never learned, and was using her phone to scan recipes on the sides of boxes, to read her children's report cards, to translate signs, to access information from the ATM machine. Mm-hmm. So that she could actually use the ATM machine. And it was this world-altering thing for her. Sure. To have her phone be able to speak these words to her and you know, add context to these things. And yeah, so totally agree. It's just this monumentally powerful thing that none of us are going to think of because none of us are ever going to be in that situation.
Yeah.
Right. Google's doing what Microsoft set out to do, or Nokia set out
with WorldLens
10 years ago.
Yeah.
With Mary Jo Foley saying, we want to connect the next billion devices.
Yep.
Never believed them. Truly believe that Google's actually turning around and trying to make phones do more. Like what we said for years, it's no longer about the tech, it's about what it can do for you. Well, now we're at a point where all of this stuff is actually going to change the way people live their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, it's already doing it. It's just doing it to a greater degree, and it's easier to see because more people have it, and that's good.
There are now 2.5 billion active Android devices, they announced.
Oof.
Yeah, that's up there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of them.
We didn't get a cute little video of the Android figure taken off in a rocket ship or something to this benchmark.
No, it was just next slide.
And I'm a little sad about that.
Yeah, it was very much in the same way that they haven't updated the Android distribution dashboard until today, and then they never will again. They just were like, yeah, not really that important anymore. Yeah. 2.5 billion, and also 10% of active devices are on Pi. And okay, great.
I think we'll see that number go up as Google starts to add more restrictions. As to go, we need everything on Android One. We need to be on Android Go. You've got to update within this. You've got to do that. You've got to do this. Eventually, they're just going to be this controlling right. Mothership across Android, which
will
have
better.
Its good and bad, right. Good and bad reasons.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Mobile, what was your biggest thing?
3A, for the reasons already stated.
That's important. Verdict to come
succinct.
At Mr. Mobile's YouTube channel.
Even if it's a total disaster area somehow, it was still, for me, clearly the most important one of the show, not just because my beat is all mobile, but because I really, really think this is the beginning of a massive sea state shift, which is difficult to say,
nice.
in the mid-range, and it's exciting to see.
My biggest thing is something that we didn't dive into here because it's still very broken and not finished at all, which is the new features in Android Q that they announced.
Oh, yeah.
That, honestly, I've been playing with it on the Pixel 3, and it is so just still not finished. Yeah. And they announced dark theme for the entire interface that you can just toggle on and off or have come on automatically. That's great. But it just doesn't work with all of these apps because apps are not designed for it yet.
Right.
And the biggest example of the same type of thing is, excuse me, the new gesture navigation, which is off by default, even in the beta, which really tells you something, that brings in, it's basically just the iPhone X interface. Swipe up from home, swipe up and hold and, you know, shift left or right to switch apps. And gesture areas coming in from the left side or the right side for back. And you can do back, swiping in from the left or the right, and it means that you can't use swipe in gestures from the left side to open a hamburger menu.
Gotta say.
Oh, God.
Now that means it's back.
Gotta say, it took me all of a minute and a half.
I will die on this hill in the same way that you'll die on the hill of notches.
I'm not going to fight you on this one, because what he's talking about, Andrew and I were talking about earlier, I'm not convinced that a ton of people actually use the swipe-in thing. I think they tap the hamburger button. I'm certainly willing to be wrong. Please don't at me. But it took me all of a minute of using the Beta 3 preview to really get comfortable using that swipe-in to go back in an app. It just felt supernatural.
I will die on the hill that goes, I see zero reason for gestures. I like the buttons when I can just do what I want to do. Adding, with all the extra screen real estate, adding whatever, however many pixel rows, what is it? 7 rows or 120, whatever the hell, however much you lose, for the simplicity of, here's a button, here's a double plus to hit recent, here's this I can do, here's to do all of that. Without having to go, oh, what's this gesture? Switch phones and all of that stuff.
Listen, caveman.
Yeah,
we're switching to wheels, and you're going to have to get on with the...
I mean, guys, I do say
take
that.
Take those square tires off.
The other phone in my the phone in my second pocket is an iPhone XS. So,
well, and here's
so I kind of got used to all of this
all
anyway.
Just so that we're all firmly on the record as disagreeing with each other, 100%.
We're all wrong.
The greatest tragedy of today is that Google didn't just steal Motorola's implementation of gestures. The only one that makes
this
sense.
Was their, this still was the thing them, they said, but this was the thing they said on stage. Everybody's doing something different. We're trying to take the best ideas and make it the standard.
And it is my contention that they have not done that. Take Motorola's idea. It is the best way to do gestures.
And
just
also,
go into a store and use a Moto Z3.
It also feels like it needs.
It
needs to be improved and changed. Still, what they're showing, what they're doing, does not feel finished. It feels funky. It just doesn't feel right yet, and that's why I can't really fully judge it. And the other problem being they have to tell developers to change their apps to work with it.
Well,
and
that's
it
true.
Doesn't,
hold on, we said that last
have...
year. We said this a year ago. Well, the Pi. Well, this. Oh, this gesture pill. This pill thing is weird. But you know what? It's early. I'm sure they'll fix
and
it.
They did, and they did. And they scrapped it all.
It doesn't ultimately matter what Google does with Android Q because these OEMs can still do it their own damn way.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah. Oh,
and they're fundamental of we're trying to bring this and make it all unified. It's not going to matter because everyone will just do whatever they want to do.
They'll make it unified if they make it better than every OEM solution.
To drop the rabbit hole for a second, as much as I think the 3A was great from today, and I loved all of that, I think the bigger changes of all the Google Assistant changes as a big encompassing thing, biggest announcements from today.
All right.
Way more important than gesture navigation.
So we have purple phones.
Less exciting, though.
Purple-ish phones. We had a lot of cool stuff today.
A lot of nests.
A lot of other things that we're undoubtedly going to be talking about for the next couple of weeks at least. Gentlemen, it is beyond 11 o'clock on the West Coast, and we have 2 more days this exciting conference. Google I.O. always a fun thing. For all of you listening at home, please hit us up on Twitter with what you think was the most important announcement from I.O. We definitely want to hear it so that we've got your thoughts here. And as always, thank you for listening. Where can we find everybody?
You can find me on Twitter at Andrew Martinik, MARTONIK. At me. It's okay.
Yeah. You can also add me. I'm at the Mr. Mobile, THEMRMOBILE. I like hanging out on Instagram. Come hang out with me there.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Nirav, NIRAVE, and add a G if you're on Instagram.
Nice.
And you can at me. I may not respond, but you can at me anyway.
I'm against the concept of social networks. Don't talk to me. But thank you all for listening, and we will... I'm not going to give you a shot.
You're going with it, huh?
Not going to happen.
Commitment. I like that.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and y'all have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Stay mobile.